Is Parshas Tetzaveh. I'll start with a drush. This drush is a little wild. It's a wild drush, but just it's very short. Parshas Tetzaveh, if you think about it, is for a lack of a better term, is a wild parsha. What do I mean by wild parsha? There are so many different things in the parsha that seemingly have nothing to do with each other. We start off with the clothing. Okay, that's very nice. We have all the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Hedyot, Rabbi Sa. And then we discuss the Miluim. The Miluim are the special Korbanos that were offered when they inaugurated the Mishkan. I mean, you would assume that the Miluim should be in Parsha Shmini. There's a whole complicated, very complex Aliyah. Revi, Chamishi, I remember Shagzil, exactly Chamishi. It's a very complicated Aliyah describing all of the Korbanos. And Rashi keeps on saying again and again, oh, this is the only carbon, Chatos, where it was completely burnt. Well, this is the only carbon where they burnt the breads. This is the only carbon where they did this. The whole section, I think it's the fifth Aliyah that deals with the special, unique set of Korbanos that were offered on this day. It was not on this day. It happened actually during Chav Gimel Adar, the 7 days, the last 7 days of Adar, when they inaugurated the Mishkan, the 8 days of Milu, leading up to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which was Vayhi Bayom Hashmini. It's all presented here in Parshas Tetzaveh. You would expect that the Parsha of Korbanos should be in Parshas Shmini. It should be where the inauguration took place. Vayhi Bayom Hashmini. All of a sudden, it's in Parshas Tetzaveh. Doesn't seem to be in the right place. Also, in this week's parasha, it mentions the Mizbeach HaZohav. And every single commentator asks the question, the Mizbeach HaZohav, this does not belong in Parshas Tetzaveh, it belongs in Parshas Terumah. The structure of the Beis HaMikdash belongs in Parshas Terumah, not in Parshas Tetzaveh. What is it doing here in Parshas Tetzaveh? And there are so many different answers, but after all the answers are given, the question still remains, is that the Mizbeach HaZohav does not belong here. The Mizbeach HaZohav is part of the Kelim, it's part of the structure, it's really no different than the Menorah, than the Shulchan, the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, the Kodesh, the Oroin. What is it doing here? It belongs back in Parashas Terumah. In this week's parasha, we learned about the Carbon Tomit. The Carbon Tomit? What is the Carbon Tomit doing here? The Carbon Tomit belongs where? In Parashas Pinchas. And indeed, it's Parashas Pinchas. So My Korah, what's going on in the Parshas Tamid? There are other things. Okay, there are other things. Also, we mentioned this part that Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to speak to Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm going to speak to you here in the Mishkan. V'nei adati l'cha shama. This is where I'm going to communicate. This doesn't seem to be the place to talk about. It's nishtahi nishtaher. It's just thrown in the middle of nowhere. We mentioned Yom Kippur. Achas bashana techaper al b'nei Yisrael. There's a little bit of mention of Yom Kippur. You're going to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you're going to be the Keturis on Yom HaKippurim. It mentions the principle of Kohanim eating. V'ochlu oisam asher kupar bohem. There are a lot of very powerful concepts, which are anyway repeated elsewhere in the Torah. But anyway, almost all of these concepts, anyway, to some degree are repeated anywhere. And if we were, you know, focusing, and we were asked just off the bat, where would you expect to find? Where do you find the Parshas Tamid? Tamid, you're going to find Parshas Pinchas, all the other Korbanos. Where are you going to find the Korbanos of the Miluim? Parshas Shmini. Where are you going to find the Mizbeach? Mizbeach is Parshas Terumah. Where are you going to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu? Parshas Kisisa. There's a collection of things here that, when you think about it, it's very disturbing. And for lack of a better term, it's a wild parsha. Why? Why is it wild?
There would be no parsha if you took it alive.
What?
There would be no parsha.
So in a chanami. So we'll read this, we'll rearrange the parsha. You can start. Truma should then be part of parshas. Tetzaveh should be part of Truma. Just extend, put the Mizbeach in parshas Truma, and extend parshas Truma another column. Parashas Tetzaveh, the Terumah is a short parasha. You could extend it one more column, even less, to include the Big Day Kohuna, and everything else, omit, and put them in the right place. And we'll have one parasha called Parashas Terumah Tetzaveh, which will include the Mishkan and the Kelim. It won't be so long. It won't be more than five columns, or even less. It'll be an average size parsha, and all of these other things about the Miluim, about the Tamid, about Hashem speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu, about Yom HaKippurim, we can redistribute where they really belong. What's going on over here? So I want to tell you, the same way this is the question is, the parsha is a little bit wild, a little bit chaotic, so to speak. You know why it's chaotic? Because Moshe Rabbeinu is not in the parsha. Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned in the parsha. Mocheini na misifricha asher kosafta. If you're not going to forgive Klal Yisrael for the ego, I don't want to be here. I don't want to have any part in this. And because the tzaddik says something, bris krusa lisfasayim, afilu kilal tzaddik is niskayim. There has to be a parsha where Moshe in his name is not mentioned. So Moshe is not here. Where there is an absence of Jewish leadership, there is chaos. There is chaos. If you don't have leadership, strong leadership that is just, that is proper, no corruption, then there's this chaos.
That's what happened by the Eagle.
Exactly. Moshe was not there. Kol anoy sani shomea. There's a sound of chaos. Moshe is not in Parshas Tetzaveh. His name is not mentioned. It's chaotic. We go one thing to another thing, back and forth. The whole parsha is running around, running around your head, doing all these gymnastics, intellectual gymnastics. Why? Because there's no stability. Jewish leadership is essential, is what puts Klal Yisrael on a path that guides them to where they're supposed to be. Look, study history. The generations, the eras where Jewish people had strong Jewish leadership were much happier times. They were not necessarily better times, but people were a lot happier. People somehow, they felt secure. You know, post-World War II, Jewish people, I mean, I don't know the history well, and maybe what I'm saying is totally wrong, but after World War II, let's jump ahead a little bit after some of the chaos was over. Let's go to the 60s, the 70s. This is before my time, but the 60s, the 70s, even the 80s. It seems that Klal Yisrael, first of all, Klal Yisrael wasn't nearly as wealthy and as powerful as they are today. They didn't have the kind of money was not available. Klal Yisrael was relatively very poor. There wasn't money for anything in those days, in the 60s, the 70s. Today, Baruch Hashem, it seems that there's a lot of money out there. I don't know where to find it, but it seems that some people found it. There is money out there for some people, some organizations. They're able to hear how people, they raise money, astronomical sums of money that years ago, who would ever imagine they could raise so much money? Some of these organizations, and they tell you exactly how much money they raise. It's like unbelievable. Where'd you find all this money? Years ago, it wasn't like that. Okay, it wasn't like that. There was no money out there. And there were a lot of problems. And some of the problems were even bigger than the problems we have today. And yet, for some reason, when people look back at those times, they just have a certain sense of peace. A certain sense of, you know, calmness. Why? Because the world was better. Was the world really better? Was the world really better with the hippies and with the Soviet Union and the Cold War? Was it really, really better? Not necessarily. It's one thing that we definitely had then that we don't have today is we had strong Jewish leadership. There were people who were powerful people that were very well respected, and they made a difference. People just wasn't, it wasn't an Olam Shel Hefker. Today, it's a chaval. Today, it's weak. I'm not saying there's no leadership today, chashom to be the katre, but you don't get that sense where there is strength in leadership. Look at the parasha. It's chaotic. It's just a collection of things running back and forth from here and there. And it is related to the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu is not present. There's no leader. When the cat's away, the mice will play. Okay. Just going off on the side, from all of the parshas, if there had to be a takana, there had to be a takana, there had to be a fulfillment of mocheni na misifrich asher kosofta. Why is it that Parshas Tetzaveh was selected? Why Tetzaveh more so than any other Parsha? What is unique about Parshas Tetzaveh? It's very simple. Because Parshas Tetzaveh is all about Chavoid v'sifores. Yosisa big day kuhunu l'ar nochicha l'chavoid u'l'sifores. What does it say about Moshe Rabbeinu? V'ish Moshe onav me'oid. There is no one more humble, no one ever was, no one ever be more humble than Moshe Rabbeinu. If Moshe has to disappear from one parsha, in many parshas, he can disappear from any one of the parshas in the Torah from the time that he was born, from the beginning of the Torah, from the beginning of Shemais. Moshe was born in Shemais. If Moshe is going to disappear, he can disappear from anyone. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu select to disappear from parshas Tetzaveh to the Mekayim Mochenina? It's because Moshe hides from Kovod. The Parsha of Chovod and Tiferes is Parshas Tetzaveh, clothing, the beautiful clothing which bring upon the person Kovod and Tiferes. Moshe has no chilkus. Moshe, the Ish Moshe, Onav Me'oid, Mikol Ha'adam, Asher Al Pnei Ha'adamah. There's no covenant to the first. It's not a coincidence. Moshe is a Sheva Levi. Okay. I mean, Aaron is also Sheva Levi, but Moshe remains with the Din of Levi. Isn't it remarkable that there is absolutely no mention whatsoever anywhere b'cholat harakula about the uniform of a Levi? What do they wear? Well, they came in jeans and t-shirts. How do the Levim serve in the Beis HaMikdash? Levim are very prominent people. They serve at every gate. When you come to the what do you see when you come to the Beis HaMikdash? You don't see Kohanim. On the outside of the Beis HaMikdash, you see Shemira. You see guards. Who are the guards? The Levim. Who play the musical instruments? The music, the melodies. Who provide the entertainment? Right, if you go away for Pesach, what do they show you on the picture? Come join us in this hotel for Pesach. Who is performing? Who is the chazan? Who's giving a concert? Right? They show you, who's the entertainers? Who are the rabbanim who are going to speak? They don't show you the shtender and the sitter. We have a nice art school siddurim for everyone. What? They show you the pool. They show you the entertainment. They don't show you the avoida. Come for Pesach. They don't show you the matzah. They don't show you the sitter. They don't show you the moror, the koirech. They show you the entertainers. They show you the musicians. They show you the magician, the shadchanim. They show you the rabbanim, the darshanim. These are the Levim. The Levim were the entertainers. They sang the music. They sang. They played musical instruments. The Levim. These were the people who provided, the entertainment. The kohanim. What did they do? They slaughtered. They worked in the kitchen. They were the kitchen staff. They did the shechita, the kabbalah, the halacha, the schleppers, the avoida. They burnt the. They took out the garbage. Shumas Adeshen. And they are the ones that are wearing the beautiful, beautiful, glorious clothing. L'chavaydu l'sifaris. What about the Levian? There's no mention. There is no mention anywhere what the Levim wore, how they were dressed, when they served. And they served in a very, very significant, noticeable way. What do they look like? We have no idea. It has to be they had a uniform. Cannot be every Levi just showed up and whatever he felt like putting on in the morning. Put on his pajamas. Business casual, Levi. Right? Business casual. Come in your slipper, come in your Crocs and your this. It's ridiculous. Obviously they had uniforms, but it's not mentioned. Why is it not mentioned? How come they? Obviously the Chazal had a nisar and a uniform. They had, like the kids in the girls' schools have uniforms. They had to have a uniform. Obviously it's because whatever the uniform was, it's not lechavoid ulisafaris. Why? Because the Levim are patterned after Moshe Rabbeinu. V'ho'ish Moshe onov me'oid mikol ho'adam asher al pnei ho'adam. Aroin, Yosisa Vigdei Kodesh Li Aharoin Ochicha. Notice, it says the clothing is for Aaron. It doesn't even say about everyone else. When the Torah begins Parashas Tetzaveh and it gives focus to the clothing, it only focuses on one person. Aaron. The regular Kohen only wears four garments of what Aaron wears. The Ikar clothing is for one person in the Torah. The Ikar clothing is not even for the Kohen Hedit. Happens to be the
Kohen. Aaron means Kahana, but Zayis Yod by Aaron.
El HaKodesh. Aaron doesn't mean every single. I mean, we extrapolate, okay, but it says Aaron. Aaron is Aaron HaKohen. Okay, the Kohen Gadol. And the clothing are described as his clothing. Look at the there. And what are the clothing for? L'chavoid u'l'sifares. Moshe, what does it say about Moshe? V'ho'ish Moshe onav me'oid. Aaron is the kavod. Moshe is the onav. Not that Aaron's not an onav, chas v'shalom. Of course, Aaron is the midah of animus. But Aaron has to display kavod. He has to present himself in a matzav of glory. Moshe presents himself in a matzav of anava, of humble. Nothing. There's no chitzonius. It's just pure. This is the guy. I'm going to say Aaron. The Messiah, how tall was Aaron? Aaron was very short. These are two brothers. Aaron was very. How do you know Aaron was very, very short? Because it says in the pasuk that he should make for Aaron steps to get up to the menorah. The menorah was not all that tall. The menorah was 18 tefachim. 18 tefachim. So it's three amos. If you were a little bit tall, if you were a little bit taller than average. You don't need steps. You don't need three steps. It seems that Aaron was unusually short. The fact that the Torah says that you shall make for the menorah, you shall make a platform which has three steps to get up to the menorah so you can light the menorah, it appears that Aaron was unusually short. Moshe Chazal say explicitly he was very, he was 10 amos tall. He was unusually tall. He was able to stand up the Kerashim, which were 10 amos tall, which is between 15 and 20 feet, all by himself. Moshe was a giant. Moshe, a giant. Aaron, a midget. Not a midget, but very, very small. They look very, very different, Moshe and Aaron. Aaron, he was very small. L'chavoid u'l'sefares. Moshe, the gibor, he was very, very tall. V'ish Moshe, onav me'oid mikol ma'adam. And obviously, the fact that these two were brothers, and these two were the leaders of Klal Yisrael, there's a balance. There are elements in our life where it has to be l'chavoid u'l'sefares, and there are elements where it has to be gevura, has to be with power and with strength. Okay, I want to go on to another idea. I want to talk about for a moment about the choshen and the ephod. Okay, Kohen Gadol wore eight garments. Among the eight garments, there are two garments that are very unique. There is the choshen, the breastplate, worn in front of him, which the psukim tell us was.
Rabbi Levine,
yes.
Just one thing. I want to interrupt, but there's a passage in Divrei Hayamim that says that Levine wore some.
Okay, I stand corrected. Does it describe or they were?
Okay. David wore the
male. Okay, that was David. They wore the ephod. Ephod bar.
Yeah, right. No,
the ephod.
The Chol Halavim, Amnoisim, Esarom, Amisharim, Ukamanya, Hasar, Hamasa.
They wore an ephod. Right. So those Kohanim, the Kohanim who wore an ephod, if I'm not mistaken, were select Kohanim. An ephod was worn by very chashuv people. It does not seem that the average Levi who worked in the Beis Hamikdash wore an ephod. The fact that it's
the ones who carried the aron,
they wore an ephod. David wasn't the kohen. David wasn't the Levi.
I know.
Right. There's a discussion about the ephod. The ephod was a garment that was given to a distinguished person. Someone argue that not only do they wear an ephod, they also wear a choshen also. So with the ephod goes the choshen. Einochinami. But it doesn't seem that the average Levi who served in the Beis HaMikdash, who stood on the Duchan, and sang Shira, and played a musical instrument, and who stood Shemira, they wore an ephod. Doesn't say anything about that. They were distinguished people. I don't think it's limited to a Levi. They were distinguished people. The fact that David wore an ephod shows that the ephod wasn't a garment that's miyuchad for a Levi. It was a garment that was a miyuchad for an Adam Chashav. The Levim who happened to carry the Arad obviously had to be Chashuvim. And also there's a big, very big question exactly who carried the Aron. When it says the Levim carried, this is Machlokes in the Gemara, when it says that the Levim carried the Aron, does that mean Kohanim? And Kohanim are called Levim in 24 places in Tanakh. We call Kohanim Levim, or does it mean Levim Mamish? So hey, the people who carried the Aron were really in a different category. And also that came to an end when they brought the, after they came to the Beis HaMikdash, no longer was there a need to carry the Aron. Okay, but the point is taken, I accept. It does make mention of other people wearing a garment called the ephod. But let's go back to the Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol wore 8 garments. Among the 8 garments are 2 garments. One is called the ephod, one is called the chayshem. These 2 garments are unique relative to the other 6 garments in that they need each other. You cannot have one garment without the other. What held up? What held the chayshem? If there was no ephod, the chayshem will fall on the floor. The chayshem was a piece of material. It wasn't so big. It was a piece of woven material with 5 different types of material: gold, 3 types of wool, linen, all spun together. It was a rectangle, folded over. In the fold was the Shem Hashem, called the Urim V'Tumim, and it was suspended with 4 rings. There were 4 rings along its 4 corners. After it was folded over, it was a perfect square. Ravua Yiyah, there were 4 rings, and these rings were suspended to the ephod above with chains, whatever that means. Shar Shirois Gavlus Maasei Avos. We spent time on this in the afternoon, Chumash and Rashi, Unklis. And then on the bottom there was a strap of Tcheles, which kept it in place. And where was it held? Where was it connected to? It was connected to the ephod. The ephod is a garment that was worn on the back of the body. If you study the ephod was a garment that covered the back of the body. That's all it did. Almost like a cape. Rashi Kamat says it was like a cape. The me'il covered the front and covered the back. The me'il was a gigantic talus cotton of wool. That's what the ephod was, with bells on the bottom. That's the me'il, made out of techeles. Whereas the ephod was a garment that only covered the back of the body. It had no sleeves. It had no way for it to be held upon a person's body. The only way the ephod can possibly survive on the person's body is there were shoulder straps which came over and they were connected to the chayshem. And on the bottom, there was a belt which connected to the bottom portion of the chayshem. So think about it. The chayshem without the ephod could not stand. And the ephod without the chayshem could not stand. Now, when it comes to the me'il needs nothing. A kohen can wear the me'il without anything. He can just put the me'il over his body. The tzitz doesn't need anything. The tzitz stands on its own. The mitznefes doesn't need anything. You can put the mitznefes on by yourself. Okay, the michnasayim and the kasoynes, they don't need anything. If you don't want to wear pants, that's your problem. You don't want to wear a shirt, that's your problem. You don't want to wear a hat, that's your problem. You don't want to wear a tzitz. But when it comes to the ephod and the chayshen, each one cannot survive alone. Am I saying? I'm telling you, this is a fact. This is a fact. Go look at any picture book. And the second point that's very important, I want to emphasize to an intense degree, is that the ephod is a unique garment that we have no equivalent of at all in the modern times, unless you want to say you're Superman. It is a garment that covers your back. Even a Superman, even a, what's a cape? I don't even know what's the purpose of wearing a cape. It's just for style, like wearing a tie? What is a cape? People wear, in ancient times, people wore capes. A cape, you attach it to your neck, around your neck, and you walk around and it goes behind you. It's not attached to your body. It just flies behind you. Lahavdil, whatever, Superman. Yeah, he wears a, what is a cape? I have no idea. They wore capes in ancient times? A problem did. Some want to say that the ephod was really like a cape. I think it looked like a
Roman's wore. It was part of the tradition.
Okay, so it's style. I'm assuming it's style. It's style. Okay, but that's not what the ephod is. The ephod doesn't just flow freely behind your body like a cape. The ephod was fastened to your body. The ephod is not just like. Yeah.
I don't know. It's like why the meal.
Okay, no, that's a whole shoe. That's a whole other sugya. That's a different sugya. Nah. But let's talk about now the ephod. The ephod was fastened to the back of the body. It's not a cape. It was tied below and it was tied on top. It was on top, it was fastened through the shoulder straps, and below there were rings of techeles which secured it to the body by connecting to the lower portion of the ephod. But it is a garment that covers the back. That's the second point of introduction. So let's review. Point number one is the ephod and the cheshen, they need one another. Point number two, the ephod covers the back of the body. Now, what exactly is the ephod? We have a very fascinating Rashi. Rashi says, when he explains, in the beginning of the parasha, there's a very long Rashi, where Rashi begins to describe what the ephod. Rashi, you see, struggles and elaborates very, very much. And then he says something that is very, very shocking. And there's a story, a legend behind this. There's a legend, a story behind what Rashi says. Rashi, the legend is, Rashi was learning Parashas Tetzaveh, and he was learning the sugya of the ephod, and he didn't really know what it was. He really couldn't figure out the nature of this garment. And Rashi was outside, or maybe he was inside by a window, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a woman comes down the block, galloping on a horse. A woman galloping on a horse. Today they would censor this, because how could Rashi see a woman, right? But a woman comes down, galloping on a horse. And this woman, it was a noble woman, and she was dressed in the common attire the noble woman wears when they go horseback riding. And the clothing you wear, the clothing of the nobles that they would dress in when they did horseback riding is not the clothing they wear when they're going to the store, when they're walking down the street. You put on special clothing when you go horseback riding, just like you have special clothing when you go skiing, and you have special clothing when you go swimming, and special clothing when you go hiking, and when you go jogging. Every type of sport has its own unique set of clothing to achieve what you need to do. So when the noble women would go horseback riding, they wore a special type of garment. And this garment was, we're not familiar with this, was draped and secured around the back of the body. And Rashi was learning the sugya of Parashas Tetzaveh, the sugya of the ephod. He picks up his eyes and he sees a noble woman on a horse galloping down the street, and he understood that Hashem was providing him with siyata d'shmaya to understand exactly what the ephod looked like. And Rashi, now that part of the story is not in Rashi, I think it's somewhere else that says that. Rashi here, at least on this parasha, beginning of the Tzavah, says, what is the ephod? It is a sinor. It is an apron that noshim, women, sorois, noble women wear when they go riding roichvim al hasusim, when they roichev al hasusim. Rashi says this in the very beginning of Parashas Tetzaveh. That is what the ephod looked like. Fascinating. So this that opens up a big question. Everyone, we know there's a halacha that a man is not allowed to wear a woman's garment. Lo yilbash gever simlas isha. And a woman's not allowed to wear a man's garment, because this will lead to Averos, to sin. Yet the Kohen Gadol, the holiest Jew of them all, was wearing what Rashi himself says was a woman's garment.
He wore it first.
What?
He had it first.
So Rav Nachum Sperling is suggesting it's not a question, because they took it from us. Okay. The Kohen Gadol wore it first, and the Nosh and the Sorois, they stole it from us. I hear what you're saying, but I want to suggest not necessarily. I want to say maybe even in ancient times, this is what women wore. it's a woman's garment. Or at least it has the tzura of a woman's garment. So this is, I'm just throwing out this question. Obviously, it's not a question. I'm sure there are many answers that no, when a woman rides a horse, she wears this garment as part of the set of the Big Day Kahuna. It's different. It's not a woman's garment. Don't get carried away here. But I just want to ask that question to bring out the point. Rashi says explicitly it is a garment that is worn by noshim, women, when they go horseback riding, especially noble women. Sorois kishereichvois al hasusim. Something along those exact words. That's what Rashi says in Parashas Tetzaveh. Haloi davar, a woman's garment. The Kohen Gadol is wearing a woman's garment. Okay. Now, another question I want to point out before we put everything all together. Isn't it interesting that both the ephod that we're discussing and the choshen, which we explained are interconnected, both of them have upon them the shemois of the Bnei Yisrael. On the ephod, on the shoulder straps, there are two stones, and in these two stones are etched the names of the 12 shvatim. And likewise, on the choshen, there are 12 stones etched the shemois of Bnei Yisrael. Isn't that a little bit of a repetition? Why do you have to have the stones twice? Everyone needs their name twice. Honorable mention. It's not enough to have their name once. It's like you say, Chavivus. Moshe, Moshe. Vayom Hineini. Right? So each one of the Shvatim, their name is mentioned twice. Chavivus. Chavivus. Rashi says that when your name is repeated twice, it's Chavivus. Okay, maybe. Maybe that's a Jewish in and of itself. Everyone's name was mentioned. Every member of Klal Yisrael, their name was mentioned twice. Twice. Yaakov, Yaakov. Moshe, Moshe. Avram, Avram. Chavivos. Okay. But still, it's a question. Why twice? What's the repetition? So I want. Now let's do this one more piece of introduction, then we're going to compile everything together. Let's go back to Oz Yashir. Oz Yashir, Moshe, Vneis, Vashir, Azos, Lashem, Vayimurim. Ashir la Hashem. But he sing to Hashem, ki go'oi go'o. Sus. The horse, the reichvai, and the rider, Yoravayam. Hashem, you have taken not only the rider, but the horse source in one shot. In one shot, you threw them into the sea. What were those? There were men riding horses and finished them off. Moshe goes on, he sings to Hashem a very elaborate, complex Shira, and then the Shira is over. Along comes Miriam. Vatikach Miriam es atoif biyada. Vatetzen chol hanoshim achanecha bisufim uvim chilois. Vatan lechem Miriam. Miriam has the short version of the Shira. Right? She has, what's it called? The abridged version. She has the, what's called the notes, the cliff notes. The cliff notes version of the Shira. One pasuk. Ashira la Hashem ki goy oy go'o sus v'rechvoy rama v'yam. From all of the pasukim in the Shira, Miriam selected one pasuk. The pasuk that talks about the horse and the rider. What's pshat? Why from all the pasukim did she select the horse and the rider? What's going on? So it's very important, Rashi. What is Bechlau? What is in general? Why are we focusing on the horse and the rider? What's going on here? So the very important Rashi. Rashi here, beginning of the Shira, says, Ki goy oy go'o. First he says, Kitar gumay. And then he says the following, Dover acher. Bo hakefel. The reason why Rashi is asking the question, why does it say goy oy go'o? Two words, goy oy go'o. Loimar. That Hashem has done in this moment, Davar, She'i efshar lebosar v'dam la'asos. So Hashem has done the impossible. Something which a human being cannot possibly do. Kishehu nilcham bechaveroi, when a human being fights, battles his fellow man, u'miskaber olav and is successful, prevails upon him, ma'piloi min hasus. One human being can be victorious in bringing down, pulling down, causing to fall down the rider from the horse, but the horse remains standing. Okay, if you ever saw a good movie, and they're fighting, and you go out and you take out your weapon and you knock off the horse remains. The horse just goes off into the sunset, goes out into the sunset, and the rider, the villain, is gone. The Kaan here in this night in Kriyas Yamsuf, Hashem did so that no one else could do the Kaan. Sus v'roichvoy Rama v'ayam. Hashem, when he conquered the Egyptians, he conquered them in one shot, the horse and the rider. Something that a human being cannot possibly do. V'chol, here are the key words. Anything in this world, she'i efshar la'asois al yidei zulasoi. Anything that cannot be done al yidei zulasoi by anyone else, something that can only be accomplished by you, and there's no one else in the world that could achieve this other than you in the world, noifel boy l'shoin geos. That's where it's appropriate to say the word geos. When you need another person, when you do is unique, they said that's unique and it cannot be done by anyone else other than you, that's where it's called gateless. But something that you also can do, I also can do this, I don't need you. There's nothing special about you. Nothing special about you. I can do the same thing by myself. Then you don't use the word gateless. Gateless represents a concept of this is the only way it could be done. Uniqueness. Geos is that only you can do this and no one else can do this. Okay. With all that in mind, I want to make you the following suggestion, the following idea, and I think we have a lot of different ideas that come together to prove the point, to prove this machshava. We have to understand the Kohen Gadol, he represents the entire Klal Yisrael. He represents the whole Klal Yisrael. The whole Klal Yisrael includes many different types of people. It includes the Gedolei Yisrael, includes the simple people, includes Balei Teshuvah, includes Avaryonim, includes everyone, slaves, the Asara Yuchsin Olam Yibavel. A major chunk of Klal Yisrael are the Noshim, Tzidkanus, are the women. The garments that the Kohen Gadol wore don't just clothing, they represent segments of the Jewish people. Let's say, for example, the tzitz. Kodesh LaHashem. So you can right away, the tzitz represents the Talmidei Chachamim, the Ge'onei Yisrael, the holiest people in Klal Yisrael, Kodesh LaHashem. You can say the hat represents a different segment. Okay, the Mechnasayim, Lechasayis, B'sarev, maybe you'll say that represents the basic elements of Klal Yisrael. Each item that is found on the garments of the Kohen Gadol represent a segment of society. The ephod represents noshim, women. The choshen represents anoshim. And the fact that each one cannot survive without the other, the choshen together with the ephod represents man and wife, husband and wife. It's not a coincidence that the chibur between the two is with a ring, with four rings, a tabas. When Hashem created Adam, there are different midrashim, Hashem put Adam to sleep, but one of the popular Mamari Chazal is the pasuk, Ochor v'kedem Tzirosani. I'm not sure if I'm saying that pasuk correctly. Maybe it's all the way around. Kedem v'ochor. I don't remember anything. Ochor v'kedem tzirosani. You have formed me from the back and from the front. And Chazal take this pasuk and they interpret it to mean that when Hashem created Adam, I think Rashi cites this in Bereishis, Hashem created Siamese twins. In the front was man, and in the back was woman. And Hashem, when Hashem put Adam to sleep, Vayapalov Tardema, Tsela, Tsela means the side. We like to, the more popular interpretation is the rib. But Sela, the Tzela HaMishkan, it means the side, Hashem sliced. Hashem sliced this being. The front is Adam, the back is Chava. Hashem sliced it down the center to create an Adam and a Chava, an Ish and an Isha. According to this pasuk, what is called the Achor, the back of man, it was Chava, it was an Isha. What was the Panim? It was Adam. The garment that is worn on the Kohen Gadol to cover his back, to cover the back of the Kohen Gadol, is Keneged Achor. The Choshen that is worn on the front is Keneged the Kedem. It's Adam. Each one can't stand on its own. If you have a Choshen, oh, we lost Kohen Gadol, we're sorry, we take only 7 garments today. The ephod is at the cleaners. At the cleaners. The cleaners is closed. It's a legal holiday. Yeah. Legal holiday. What's the next legal holiday coming up? Washington's Day? President's Day. Sorry, Kohen Gadol. There's no ephod. Just wear the choshen. I can't wear the choshen without the ephod. Or you say, Kohen Gadol, you know, the ephod, the choshen is at the repair shop. The stone got cracked. Yeah. They need to fix it. So just today, wear the ephod. Don't wear the choshen today. I can't wear the ephod without the choshen. They interconnect. One without the other is not going to stand. The ochor and the kedem must be together. It represents a principle of a chatziguf. A chatziguf. The ochor is a garment that only a woman wears. Why? Why is the ephod a garment that Rashi says that is worn by the sorois, the noshim? Because that's exactly what the ephod corresponds to. It corresponds to the back of the body. Ma'aseh Bereishis, Adam HaRishon, Chava, Achor V'Kedem Tzirasani. The Achor is Chava, is an Isha. It is a garment that is worn by an Isha. It's Bedavka, a garment worn by an Isha. The front is a garment that is worn. Is the choshen? This is the kedem. This is the garment of the man. But the two are connected. The two are connected. They are attached to each other by the shoulder straps and by a belt. They're interlinked. It's interesting. They're interlinked. I said with rings. There are 4 rings. It's not a coincidence that when the minhag Yisrael, when a man marries a woman, the Kesef Kedushin is given via a tabas. It's the chibur. The tabas is the same way the choshen and the ephod were mechubar al yidei a tabas. That's how ish v'ish are mechubar al yidei tabas. How does the ephod, connect? Now, what's on the ephod? I'm bringing another raya to this. What's on the ephod? Why are there names? Why only on these two garments do we have the names of the Shifteka? Why don't we put the names of Klal Yisrael on the tzitz? Why don't we put the names on the me'il? It's a big, big garment. So put the names of Klal Yisrael on the me'il. It's only the chibur ish v'isha that produces banim. And shloisha shlifin ba'adam. There are 3 partners. What are the partners? On the back of the garment, the back of the body is the 3 partners, father, mother, and Hashem. Shloisha shutfin ba'adam. The father provides some genetic material. The mother provides other genetic material. And Hashem, he provides the spiritual material to make this all happen. What is mechaber? What do we have in mechaber? These 2 parts, we have the ephod, which on the ephod are the shemois b'nei Yisrael. This is what the mother provides. The choshen is the garment of the husband. On his heart are the shemos, the same exact children that's on the ephod, and inside the choshen is the shem Hashem, the urim the tumim, is the shem Hashem. Shloisha shutfim ba'adam. The shemos of Klal Yisrael. There are 3 major ingredients, 3 major features that stand out on the Eifel of the Choshen. There are the Shemois on the ephod. The shemais, remember it's shemais, it's names, shemais, names, names on the ephod. There are shemais on the choshen. And what's the Urim v'tumim? Rashi says, shemais, shemais of Hashem. Three shemais. Shemais of the ephod, shemais on the choshen, shemais of Hashem in the Urim v'tumim. What are the three? Oh, three shemais? How many shemais do you need? Shalosha shutvim ba'adam. A father gives a shame, a mother gives a shame, and Hashem gives a shame. They all come together to produce the children. It's the chibur of ish v'isha coming together. Where are the shemais of the ephod? On the shoulders. Why the shoulders? The ephod has a shoulder strap, so it comes around. Kasher yisa ha'oimein es hayoinek. The way the Torah describes a mother, her responsibility, it never comes to an end, the responsibility. You know what they say? Little children don't let you sleep. You see, little children are little problems. Big children, big problems. Little children don't let you sleep. Big children don't let you live. When it describes the responsibility of the mother on the shoulder, it's on the shoulder. Why the shoulder? Because that garment that covers the back of the body, achor, with the shoulder straps and the shemois, the names of Klal Yisrael, is the mother. The mother is the uman, the nursing, a wet nurse. The mother is who nurses the child. Kaasher yisa ho'oimein esayinoik. Like a mother who nurses her children, she carries her child. Where do you carry your child? On the shoulder. The father, on his heart. The father has all the daimis. V'nosa aroin eshemois b'nei Yisrael al liboy. On his heart. Daigus. I once heard Rabbi Belsky, they wrote this in the book. I think they wrote this in the book. He had a daughter, Baruch Hashem, had all his children, Baruch Hashem. And one of his daughters, he's having a hard time, like everyone else in this world. Okay? And Rabbi Belsky was, I remember Baruch Hashem, he was so busy. I don't think I ever saw such a busy person. Rabelsky, every second of the day, he was being pulled in every direction. And he had a daughter in Shidduchim. And it's in the book, this is in the art school book. And it's his responsibility to marry her. Rabelsky was not a rich man by any means, by any standard. Later in his life, his son-in-law became a billionaire. I'm sure the son-in-law helped everyone out. But until that happened, Rechnitz didn't have a penny to his name either. Rechnitz, he learned that Rabbi Belsky was supporting Rechnitz in Koilo. And then Rechnitz told him one day, I want to go work. So he was very upset. You don't have enough money? I'll give you more. I'll give you more money to support you. Don't go to work. I want you to learn. But in the book, it says that Rabelsky said to his daughter, the daughter was very worried. She was getting, at an age where it was very, people were really worried. It's very, very difficult. Rabelsky said, in putting aside all humility, he said, the whole day, people bring me problems. They bring me the world's problems. Every second is another problem, another issue. Another tzara, another daiga, another impossible situation. Every second of the day. But he's told his daughter, but when I come home at 2 o'clock in the morning and everything's, and then I go to sleep for a few hours, for a few minutes, the only problem, the only issue, the only daiga that I take with me when I go to sleep is my responsibility to find for you a chasan that you deserve. Okay, your children are your children. You can be running the world and dealing with everyone else's problems, everyone else's issues, responsibilities, failures. But when the day is over, the only issue, the only responsibility that you take with you when you close your eyes and go to sleep, are your children. V'nosa eshemois b'nei Yisrael aliba. The mother also carries responsibility, obviously. I mean, listen, I'm not going to go over here into the modern world, but in the terminology of the Torah, kasher yisa ha'oimein es hayoinek, the shemois of the mother are on the shoulders. The shemois of the father, his adequate responsibility is al liboy. It's the chibur of ish v'isha. Go back to us. Now let's go back to the horses. What's about the horses? In the Shira, Oz Yoshe Moshe uvene Yisrael. The men, the macho people, the strong men, the men of leadership, they sang Shira. They gave a whole Shira. And at the end of the Shira, Miriam batan lohem. Everyone asked the question, lohem? That's not proper grammar. Vatan lohen miboyle. Why does it say vatan that the women, they answered lohem to them? They were singing amongst themselves. Right? The women, there was a machitza. Hayluchot v'hayluchot. Orthodox shul. The men were on one side, the women, so would you say vatan that Miriam, she responded to them, the l'shoyn nikeva, lohen miboyle. There are many, many answers to this question, which we're not discussing. I only want to discuss one answer that is relevant to our discussion. When the Noshim heard the men singing, Ashir Lashem, Sus V'roich L'Rom Avayam, that is something that was very relevant to them. Because this principle of a horse and a rider, first of all, it's a unit. If there's no horse, if the rider doesn't have a horse, first of all, there are many different dimensions to this principle. If you have very good horses, but you have no one to ride them, what's it going to help you? You can have Black Hawk helicopters, but if you don't have pilots who know how to operate them, what's it worth? Well, the United States, embarrassingly, they gave away $80 billion of military equipment, including some of the most sophisticated helicopters in the world. Black Hawk, give terrorists Black Hawk helicopters. You know what those helicopters are capable of doing? How sophisticated they are? So the United States, of course, there's no excuses. Bush or Klima. So they tried to stay in their defense. They don't have pilots how to operate. They don't even know where all the buttons are. They don't even know how to turn it on. They don't even know how to turn it on. Don't worry, they'll figure it out. They don't know how to operate. Our pilots need decades of training how to operate this sophisticated piece of machinery. They know how to operate this. It's worthless to them. It's worthless. They don't know what to do with these things. You have a horse, you need a rider. You can have the most macho, most sophisticated rider. If he doesn't have weapons, he's worthless. They're a team. Sus v'roich l'rom avayam. Sus v'roich l'rom avayam. Vatan lohem Miriam. Miriam said to the men, oh, you're seeing Shira that Hashem, he threw into the yam. Ki goy oy go, oh, the sus and the reichvay. You know, don't forget about us. Because you guys out there, you're nothing without us. Vatan lohem. The women said to the men, oh, sus and reichvay. Ah, listen to what you just said, all of you macho guys. Who did your laundry for you today? Who made supper for you? Who raised your children? Vatan lohem. The women said to the men, listen up, buddies. We're part of this. And if you want to go in the, what Rashi says, ki goy oy go'o, there are things that you can't do. Only Hashem can do. Only Hashem. There are things that can only be accomplished by one person, by Hashem. A regular person can't do this. It's likewise a husband and wife team, only they can accomplish that. Things, the sum is greater than the parts. The whole, the sum is greater, I forgot the exact expression, but the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. We're a team. It resonated with them, this principle of ki goy oy go'o. There are things that only can be accomplished one way, but no, You cannot accomplish anything. I can accomplish anything. But together, that's how it can be achieved. That is goy oy go'o. It resonated with them. This whole principle of the chibur, the sus and the reichvai, the enabler, each one is enabler of the other. The ability that each one by yourself cannot accomplish anything. It's only together can there be goy oy. It resonated. So what did they say? From the entire shira, this resonated. And this is what the Nashim, they said, Sus v'reichvoy romo vayom. And therefore, when the Kohen Gadol goes and he dresses b'chavoyd and teferes in the big day kohuna, you know what he wears? He wears the garment of a woman. And he wears what garment? The garment of Sus v'reichvoy romo vayom. The garment that the woman wears when she sits on that horse. Because that's what the women, it resonates. That pasuk is what was mechaber the ish and the isha at Kriyas Yamsuf. The men said, Sus v'roichvoy romo vayom. And the nashim v'tan lecha Miriam, Sus v'roichvoy romo vayom. So the Kohen Gadol covers the back of his body. Ochor v'kedem tzirasani. The Adam of Ma'aseh Bereishis. On the back was Chava. The front was Adam. And now you're going to represent Chava with a garment. The garment is the garment that the woman wears when she rides a horse. Sus v'roich v'ayram avayam. That's the chibur of Ish v'Isha. So let's review. We have a Yesod here. We have over here two garments. Each garment cannot stand on its own. All the other garments, you don't need the other one. You could even wear the avnet, wear nothing else. You can put on an avnet with no kesoinis and nothing. You can put on a garment, you can put on a hat, you can put on a tzitz, you can put on pants, you can put on a shirt, but you can't put on the ephod without the chashan. It doesn't stand. It's just going to fall down on the floor. There are no sleeves. There's no hole to put your arms into. It's nothing. It's just a flat garment that goes on the back of your body. You have to secure it. How do you secure it? The choshen. How does the choshen stand? If the choshen can't stand by it, the choshen needs to be secured to the ephod. What does the choshen represent? The husband. What does the ephod represent? The wife. They're a team. Each one together participates to produce children. The shemais are on the ephod. There are shemais on the choshen. There are shemais in the choshen of Hashem's name. Shemais, shemais, shemais. The hashpah. The hashpah. Shloisha shudfim ba'adam. In Klal Yisrael. Shloisha shudfim ba'adam. The tabois. How are they connected? What is the technique to connect? Rings. Now we understand why it's the Minag Yisrael. The Chibur Ish V'Isha, Kesef Kiddushin, Shove Kesef, Atabas. Why specifically is the garment in the back, Rashi says it's the garment of an Isha who rides a horse? Because that's the Chibur of Ish V'Isha in the Shira Sayan. Sus V'Roichvoy, Rama Vayam. The Kohen Gadol, he captures. And let's remember over here, who is the Kohen Gadol, Rabbi Yisai? Aaron HaKohen. What was his specialty? What did it say in his resume? His resume, Aaron HaKohen. Marriage counselor. That's Aaron's specialty. When Aaron died, what did Chazal say? 80,000 children accompanied his coffin. And what were the names of these 80,000 children? Aaron. 80,000 Aarons. Why? Because all of those children were products of marriages that he saved, that would otherwise would have gotten divorced. And he made shalom in ish l'ishtai, that a child, name it after the marriage counselor. Do a study in America. How many couples name their child after their marriage counselor? Oyev shalom, veroidev shalom, he was mechaber the ish, the isha, memela, his garment, was ochar v'kedim tzirasani. It was the ish, the isha, enveloped his guf. All of the pieces come together. I think it's, we have a solid, solid thesis to explain the chibur, what exactly these two garments are, their interconnection, the names on the shoulders, kasher yisa ha'oymen es hayoynek, the father, v'hoya alev aharein, v'voy lefnei Hashem. Okay, now before we conclude, I'll tell you one other short var to wind down. We have two more verilach, but it's only very, so two lay, so I'll take it very, very short. Very short vart, very important vart. At the end of the parasha, Rashi says something that's a little bit shocking. Rashi says, the very end of the parasha, when we're talking about the Mizbeach Hanach Azov, but Rashi throws, it's such a wild mamash, a wild parasha. He throws in the Mizbeach Hanach Hoshes, and he says there at the end, V'nei Adi Zuchil L'choshom, I'm going to meet you there. Very, very quick. I'm going to meet you there. I'm going to speak to you, Moshe Rabbeinu, from on top of the Mizbeach Hanchoshes. Not the Mizbeach Hazov. Mizbeach Hanchoshes. V'no'adil Choshama. And I will speak to you from on top of the Mizbeach. Rashi goes on to say, and there's a machlokes in the Gemara, where did V'no'adil Shom, Pasuk Mem Gimel, okay, this is referring to, this is not the last aliyah, this is the sixth aliyah. Vinayati Shama by the carbon tom, by the carbon tomit. Mil parsha, esvaed imam bidibur kimelacha kaveya. Okay, Rashi here says, here it is. Ladaber elecha, v'yeish me rabbi seinu lemeidim ikan shemei al mizbeach hanechoshes. Hoya hakodesh baruchu medaber imayshe mishukam amishkan. The Yesh Oymrim, this is much more popular, Me'alak HaPayres. K'moshe Ne'emar is another Pasuk. Rashi at the end, look at the Rashi of this in Pasuk, Rashi over here says, brings out a machlok, it's to Pesukim, where did Hashem communicate with Moshe Rabbeinu? When the coil of Hashem came out and spoke to Moshe, machlokis. Some say it was in the Kodesh HaKodoshim, between the Kruvim. And some say, no, it was on top of the Mizbeach, Hanechoshes, the big Mizbeach, where they offer the carbon tomit. Machlaikas. What was it? Machlaikas. So I want to suggest something very simple. Eilu v'eilu divrei Elokim chayim. The Kodesh HaKadoshim is off limits. It's a place where you go once a year. You don't just go walk into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Once a year. The Mizbeach Hanechoshes, this week's parasha, I'm going to speak to you every single day. Every single day. In the morning and in the afternoon. Olas Tomid. Keves Echot HaSev. Abayikav Yasa Keves HaSherit HaSev. And that's where I'm going to talk to you. Hashem, sometimes he speaks, what's the Musa Haslam? The Moshe Rabbeinu was just a dogma. Hashem speaks to every single person. Every single person he speaks to. Sometimes you hear a voice. Sometimes it's a big ceremony. You hear Hashem talking to you. There's a life-changing event. Things happen in life that shake you up. It changes you. Experience something, some traumatic, something very good. I got it, Hashem. I got the message. That's the Kodesh HaKodoshim. Once a year. Inside the Kodesh HaKodoshim, place that you don't ordinarily go. Doesn't happen every day. You go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, life-changing events, messages that come from Shemayim don't always come down. But then Hashem also speaks to you every single day in small ways. Small ways. Just take the hint. Hashem, it's not with Koylai Subrokin. It's not earth-shattering events in the world that shake up people. Just on a regular daily basis, you go to shul, you make an observation, some small little coincidence, some little event, a greater appreciation of what you're saying in davening, what you're learning. Every day Hashem talks to you. I'm going to meet you right there. I'm going to talk to you right there. And then there are times Hashem talks to you. No, big events happen, Hashem talks to you. Elu ve'elu divilim chayim. Yesterday was the theme of a sechta moed katan. The last daf. What did it say in the last daf? Rabbi Yosef, when he was a bar shitin, what did he do? He made a yoyma tovel rabbanon. He made a big party. Who is always the bar plukta of Rabbi Yosef?
Rabbi Akiva.
No, Abaye. Okay, Abaye always, wherever you have Rabbi Yosef, from Surly Bornstein, whenever you have a Rabbi Yosef, you're going to have an Abaye. Right. What does Abaye say in the Shechta Shabbos? Same thing, Avidna Yoyim Tavil Rabbanon. I'm going to make a holiday for the Rabbanon. When? When I ki chazise, the Shalim, when I see that at Subim Rabbanon, a young Talmud Chacham finishes on the Shechta, I'm going to make a Yoyim Tavil Rabbanon, a big Yom Tif. Same exact Musa. And these are contemporaries. These are people. Av Yosef and Abaye. What's the shot? So the pub shot is when I was 60 years old, when he passed the Zman of Koris. How many Mesechlis are there in Shas?
60.
Okay, different way, but we'll learn now for 60. 60 Mesechlis in Shas. Rav Yosef, ki have a bar shitin. When he was a master of all 60, when he finished Gan Shas, he made a party. I'm no longer cut off from any chelik of Torah. I can fight with you and I can have a discussion. I'm not cut off. He made a yoyim tovel rabbanon for all the rabbis. Abaye said, you gotta wait until you finish the whole shas. I disagree with you. Ki chazinon atzubim rabbanon deshalim mesechta. One mesechta. I already make a yoyim tovel rabbanon. Who's right? They're both right. Elu ve'elu. Rav Yosef is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The big things. But guess what? Hashem speaks to you from the Mizbech HaNechoshes every single day. HaKeves Echot HaSev HaBoker Afilu one Mesechta. Even not the Bar Shittin, even one Mesechta, you can also make a Yom Tov Rabban. Have a good Shabbat, Shabbat Shabbat. Thank you for coming and listening. We do, we haven't.